The following is a production of Galactic Netcasts. Hey guys, it's Dave. The podcast episode you're about to hear is the Galactic Netcast Roundtable, recorded during the Wolf King Studios podcast marathon for autism to raise money for the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network. This was just one of 24 hours featuring shows, interviews, and entertainment to raise money for a good cause and awareness and acceptance about autism. If you'd like to donate, and we'd love if you could, go to bit.ly/WolfKingAutism, type Wolf King Marathon in the field marked in honor of name, and WolfKingPodcasts@gmail.com in the field marked in honor of email. Thanks for helping to support this great cause, and without further ado, here's your podcast episode.
Wolf King Marathon for Autism. We are in our second hour, and this hour we're going to be featuring a bevy of hosts from the Galactic Netcast. First, I'm a part of the Galactic Netcast myself as part of Exploring the X-Files. I'm joined right here locally, sitting right next to me, by my son Kevin, who is my co-host on Exploring the X-Files. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, hello.
We're also joined by Mr. Corey Scott from the podcast of Terror and other entities over there at Galactic Netcast. And our captain, El Capitan, for this hour is going to be Mr. Brad Ludwig from Sci-Fi Geeks Club, from
the... God help you all.
Yes. From Alien Invasion. Lots of other things. The last hour of the marathon, if you happen to be able to catch it. So I will turn this over to Brad for the next 55 minutes, and let's have some fun, guys. It's all yours, Brad.
All right. For those of you who don't know about Galactic Netcasts, as Sean had mentioned, we do have a number of shows within our group. You heard about the podcast of Terror, which is about horror films and the horror genre as a whole. There's the Adventure Party. Oh, I'm sorry. Podcast of Terror is done by two of the funnier people that I know, Matt Stein and and Corey.
Looks aren't everything.
Dear sweet Corey. one of our other shows, Adventure Party, that is our show about games, gaming, that is done by myself and my co-host, Glenn Bittner. He unfortunately could not join us today, but that's another one of the shows we do. The Sci-Fi Geeks Club, we talk and interview somebody that is somehow, some way involved in geek culture. That is Dave Nelson, myself, and whomever else that we can fit the other chair and the interview slot with. The Alien Invasion, that is about shows about aliens in media, whatever that may be, a podcast, a movie, a book, whatever. We talk about that. And we throw in a bit of science, too. So it's not just, us joking, pulling up the Weekly World News article and joking about, aliens popping out of the Queen Mother's head or whatever. And she's been controlling Britain all this time. I've seen a story like that. Let's see, Weird World Weekly, that's a fun one. That is Matt Stein and Dave Nelson. They talk about something that is, urban legend. They pick a topic that is something that is weird. And it's about a 15 to 20 minute podcast. It's one of our shorter ones. And you should probably check that one out. Exploring the X-Files, of course, with Sean and Kevin both as they explore the X-Files. It's one of our more clear-cut titles in the stable. And then we have the Sci-Fi Survival Guide, which is a monthly show that Daryl Johnston does. He started out as a listener from the UK. He's still in the UK, and he does a monthly podcast where he takes a trope in sci-fi and talks a little bit about it, and then does a little bit of theater of the mind towards the end of it, and kind of give you an overview of all the things that he's talked about and piece it all together, like a robot invasion or a zombie apocalypse or things of that nature, something that could end the world. That's what he talks about. And it's a very, very interesting show. So that's what Galactic Netcasts has. So we are going to start off with, we're going to do a couple of stories that you would hear and round table like we would do on any one of our particular shows that we have. So one of the things I want to start out with is something like you would hear from the Alien Invasion. And this is an interesting story from Gizmodo. A giant galaxy orbiting our own just appeared out of nowhere. So, researchers scanning the skies just got a big surprise. They spotted a humongous galaxy orbiting our own where none had been seen before. It appeared seemingly out of nowhere. So just how did the newly discovered Crater 2 manage to pull off this feat? Like a deer leaping from the interstellar bushes to stare us down through our collective headlights. Wow, a lot of hyperbole there. Although the appearance may seem sudden, the fact is that Crater 2 has been there all along. The call's coming from in the house. We just missed it. Now that we know it's there, though, there are a few other humiliating details that astronomers discovered. I like how this whole story is written. It's very wonderful. Yeah. First of all, we can't blame the galaxy's size for its relative obscurity. Crater 2 is so enormous that researchers have already pegged it as the fourth largest galaxy orbiting our own. And we can't blame its distance either. Crater 2's orbit around the Milky Way puts it right in our neighborhood. That said, how did we still see it wasn't there? A new paper out from researchers of the University of Cambridge have an answer for us. It turns out, despite being large and close, Crater 2 is a pretty dark galaxy. In fact, it's one of the dimmest galaxies ever spotted in the universe. So now that they've seen Crater 2, they've now obviously raised some questions. What else have we missed? What else is out there? The reason why I picked this story is because it has a lot of implications. We've been looking for exoplanets within our own galaxy. We've found a lot of interesting possible Earth-like planets or planets that could support alien life. And now it turns out that some of our calculations for the number of actual galaxies out there, which obviously have solar systems of their own and planets of their own, that really changes the equation for the possibility of obviously more galaxies, more opportunity for there to be life that can be found. So, Corey,
more galaxies, more problems.
And more money to try to investigate them. Absolutely. So,
you know, we're just going to wind up building a wall between our galaxy and their galaxy and make their galaxy pay for it.
Well, you know,
here's the political portion of the show.
I got to say two things about this. First, as someone who lives on a dirt road, I really don't appreciate the galaxies jumping out at us like deer jumping out of the bushes, because that happens with far too much frequency where I am. The second thing I want to say is, if we missed an entire galaxy orbiting us, the asteroid that's going to end civilization, we're not going to know about that until it hits us. So it's pretty much, you know, good night, folks. It's been real. See you later, because it might already be on the way.
So you have
so long,
job,
and thanks for
NASA.
All the fish. Yep, exactly.
But I really do think it's interesting that, you know, we know so much about what's going on in the universe but it's such a small percentage of all of it. So the stuff that we don't know is so vast, you know, compared to what we do know. I find that really interesting when we can find these things that are right there and we, you know, maybe should have seen them a long time ago or figured them out, you know, a long time ago. And here we are now just discovering them now. So
I just want to know where the aliens are.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
That's really what it boils down to. I mean, this is a chance for aliens, man.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you know, we had a story you know, the week before last on Alien Invasion, where we talked about how red dwarfs are something that have kind of been discounted as places that could have planets that could support life. But, you know, as astronomers and astrophysicists sat down and thought about it, it's not that it's impossible. It's just that the, you know, the optimum zone or distance that the planet can be from that star is a lot tighter. So there's still opportunity. So again, you're adjusting your calculations once more, because there's a potential for more possibility of discovering alien life. And you know, when we talk about alien life, we're not necessarily talking about people that, you know, slap together flying saucers or whatever and zoom about. You know, if it's microbial, doesn't matter. If it's bipedal, they've got 4 legs, 1,000 legs, doesn't matter. It's just, we as humans have been on a quest to know if we are alone. And the math is totally against it. It just seems insurmountably the amount of planets that can potentially have life on it. And we're obsessed with finding what that is, what type of life it is, and that can help answer so many questions for us, like how life started here or different ways life can begin on a planet. So we're not just looking for aliens that, you know, abduct people in Oklahoma and probe them and leave people behind to tell stories about it. It's about life in general. So it's just really kind of interesting that a whole galaxy was missed. I mean, that's just the most staggering part of this story. We don't know exactly why it's dark. Are the stars dark? Is there a lot of dust that surrounds the edge of the galaxy that is obscuring the light? Maybe the galaxy itself isn't dark. It's just that there's so much detritus orbiting the galaxy that is just, we can't see it from the side. If it is, you know, that would be horizontal to us, and we're only able to see the edge. We're not seeing like a top-down view from where we are at. So there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered by this, but so much possibility. And we had a story last week where we talked about, or no, just this past Thursday, where we talked about Stephen Hawking and the Russian billionaire working together to create, they have the majority of the technology, but they've proposed being able to send out very tiny craft, essentially, you know, maybe about the size of an iPhone, maybe a little bit bigger, and constructing a sail and actually propelling it with laser light and actually getting it to about 20% of light speed and aiming it towards Alpha Centauri, which is 4.7 light years away, and actually getting it there in 20 years. This isn't going to happen. We don't have the full technology for it yet, but it seems to be well within their grasp, and this billionaire is laying $100 million on the table to help make this happen, as well as Mark Zuckerberg and Stephen Hawking. Like I said, he's on board. So, I mean, if we can, you know, get technology like that out there, we find more galaxies that are close by, there's the possibility of being able to determine so much more than we know now about where our place is in the universe and if we are in fact alone or if there are others available to chat with.
So. Yes. And is their internet any better than mine? That's the big question for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, all this money being spent on this great, interesting technology to get us to other galaxies, and I can't even get a Verizon signal in my workplace.
Yeah, there is that. They weren't going to make it happen tomorrow. It looked like they were about 20 to 30 years away on that. But, you know, once they get that first one out to Alpha Centauri, they're saying that technology becomes cheaper, and, you know, I'm sure that more investors would come on board if they had a successful launch with something that could actually get some information, and they're talking about like pointing in a direction and launching a whole bunch of them out to one, increase the possibility that they will get data back because you have multiple units going to one area. But just think of the capability of gathering a lot of information in an area in a relatively short amount of time. We're living in an interesting age, and it's pretty darn exciting.
Yeah, you know, it just, as someone who isn't the most scientifically focused person, I find it just absolutely amazing when these stories come up, because, you know, about like what you were saying with Stephen Hawking and developing this, because even if this never comes to fruition, I feel really good about the fact that I live in a world where people are dreaming of these kinds of things, because it's from those dreams that we get other things that can come to fruition, you know?
Sure.
So, and I think it's really interesting how fast the technology evolves nowadays. And this is the birthplace of those technologies. So, you know, even though I don't always understand everything or know how feasible or non-feasible it is, I still think it's very cool to be living in this time and being able to see these ideas be bannered about. So,
sure, absolutely, absolutely. Before we move on to our next story, Sean, do you want to let people know where they can go to help with autism research and advocacy?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, this all this wonderful programming you're getting, here I'm going to do my my PBS. All this wonderful programming you're getting doesn't come for free. Well, actually, it does. But we're out here trying to raise some funds for a wonderful group called the Autistic Self Advocacy Network. These are folks who help folks with autism learn to advocate for themselves in the workplace, in school, and in other areas of life in general, housing. And they're doing wonderful work. And so we're trying to help them out. And if you want to help them out with a donation, all you need to do is go to bit.ly/WolfKingAutism. There'll be a form there. You can fill that out. In the in honor of name, we ask that you put Wolf King Podcast or Wolf King Marathon. And then in the in honor of email, you're going to put Wolf King Podcasts with an S at gmail.com. That'll help them track what's coming in from the marathon and help us learn how to do this better next year when we come back and do it again, because we want this to be an annual thing every April. So check them out. And please, if you can, donate even a dollar, whatever you can donate, every little bit's going to help those folks to help others with autism.
Absolutely. Well, our next thing that I wanted to throw around our group here is, I don't know, have you guys heard of the movie Passengers?
Vaguely. It is on the periphery of my nerd radar, but I haven't had a chance to study it.
You know, that seems to be fairly common. They just had CinemaCon on this past Tuesday in Las Vegas, and part of that is to get some of the upcoming movies a little bit of hype and a little bit of press. And one of those movies was Passengers, and Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt are a part of this project. And they showed some of the first footage from that movie, and it seemed to get some really good reviews. Let's see. The original script for Passengers was as compelling as anyone I've ever read, said Sony Pictures chairman Tom Rothman by means of introduction. To me, it is both intimate and epic, and that required two exceptional actors, particularly given the emotional and action gauntlet that the characters must run. This is about two people who take a voyage to space knowing that they will never come back to their families again. Let's see. From Jennifer Lawrence, my character is a writer in New York, and she wants to be one of the first people to make the 120-year journey to another planet and come back and write about it. She is very ambitious. And let's see. Chris Pratt says, Jim is a mechanic, and he is the type of guy who fixes things. He uses his hands. But in the world we live in, when something breaks, you don't fix something, you buy a new one. Just saw a story that Apple pretty much has a 3-year life expectancy for an iPhone and expects you to get a new one. So, yes, mm-hmm. We live in a very disposable age. So he becomes obsolete and wants to travel to a distant planet, to a new world, a distant future, hoping he'll be useful. These two characters couldn't be more opposite, said Lawrence, delivering the line over dramatically before cracking underneath her script. It says that on the teleprompter. So as they're doing this, they've been given a teleprompter of things that they're supposed to say. As you can imagine, Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt, yeah, it's going to go off the rails. And that's exactly what happened. As you can see, Pratt said of Lawrence's character pushing on, she's glamorous, she's from New York, she's an intellect. I play a mechanic and I'm traveling on the cheapest ticket possible, which means I can pretty much eat oatmeal and live in a small cabin, whereas she has fancy food and eggs Benedict and a beautiful cabin. So there's a bit of a cultural gap. But as our characters rely on each other, they grow very close. Now, as a pause and an aside here, Passengers, as I recall, Chris Pratt ends up waking up. They're supposed to be in hibernation for 120 years, and they're going to end up on this planet. He wakes up, and he spends about a year by himself, and you can go a little stir-crazy going that long without actual social interaction. I think we've all seen Castaway. I doubt that he had a volleyball that he could paint the face on and try to get some kind of companionship. So he ends up picking Jennifer Lawrence's character and waking her up. and wackiness ensues.
Yeah, that's not a hard choice either.
Well, you know, she's an attractive woman. I'll definitely give you that. I will give you that.
Yeah, I was going to say, could they choose a cast that maybe had a little more eye candy to it?
Yeah. Not in this day and age.
He's a man too. Not gonna lie.
It strikes me that this sounds an awful lot like Titanic in space. Am I the only one kind of hearing, you know, he's the rough and tumble with the bad cabin and she's the ultra elite with the nice cabin. Doesn't it kind of sound like that to you?
As long as she doesn't ask him to fix her like one of his French girls,
yes.
Or French toast machines, whatever.
French press. Yep, there you go.
I'm just hoping there's enough room on the space raft for the two of them.
Yes. Just some door out in the middle of space, yeah. After they hit the space iceberg. So.
Yeah.
I'm quickly looking up an Urban Dictionary for French press as a sexual position.
Oh, okay.
Well, I was going for coffee, but, you know.
It could be involved.
But yeah, there's a great episode of Futurama where they kind of do this thing where, you know, Bender falls for this robot that's all uppity and stuff like that. It just, to me, it seems a little too close to that for me to be comfortable with it. So
Chris Pratt as Bender, though, is a great casting choice.
Chris Pratt as Bender. But, but you know, it's going to be interesting, I think, because Jennifer Lawrence, I really like her as an actress because she can do the action stuff. We've seen it in X-Men. We've seen it in Hunger Games. But she can also really do the dramatic stuff. Like Silver Linings Playbook, I think, is one of the best movies of the last, you know, 10 to 15 years. She was phenomenal in that movie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know she's got the chops to pull off something that can be described as intimate and epic. Chris Pratt, yep. I'm going to be interested to see because most of what I know from him is obviously his run on Parks and Recreation.
Which is a comedy,
right,
more than anything.
And he plays someone very unintelligent and not really, you know, what I would call intimate. And then, and then you've got his action stuff of Guardians and Jurassic World and stuff like that, which didn't really require a lot of dramatic acting. So that, I think, is enough to draw me in because I want to see what Chris Pratt can do.
You know, and when you make a good point, and the one thing that I think of, and I mentioned Wilson. A lot of people didn't think that Tom Hanks, you know, they put him in the comedic actor box, Bachelor Party, The Man with One Red Shoe, and countless other comedies. And then he got serious roles and people went, holy crap, this guy can really act. So I think a couple of things here. It's probably, that's amazing for his career to really open up, you know, not just getting comedy scripts, but, if this goes well, that can definitely open the the different types of scripts that would definitely come his way. So
yeah,
and it'd be interesting to see how he works with that.
Yeah, I think your comparison to Tom Hanks, though, is really appropriate there, because in the early 80s, we weren't sitting around watching Bosom Buddies on television thinking this is a guy that's going to win an Oscar in 10 to 12 years.
Yeah.
You know, he was dressed as a woman living with other women in this hotel, and it didn't exactly scream Oscar-worthy. But, so, I mean, I do really hope that Chris Pratt can pull this off, and then maybe we do get more Chris Pratt diversity in his roles. I think that would be really good if he can do it.
Now, one of the other things, obviously, if you're going to have a space movie, there's got to be some nice effects. And one of the effects that they talk about in this article, and I'm not going to read all the rest of this to you, it's that can get a little tedious, but they're swimming in a pool and like the gravity kind of goes out. So there's like this whole huge chunk of water that they can swim in at one point. So you've got some interesting visual aspects there. There's a lone robot bartender who is voiced by Michael Sheen from Masters and Johnson. What is that? Masters of Sex.
Yeah.
And countless other things. Gosh, Underworld. And he's an amazing actor. So it'll be interesting to hear his voice. And he's got such a dry delivery. If you've ever heard him on The Nerdist, he did an interview with he's dating Sarah Silverman, and Sarah Silverman like convinced him to come on to The Nerdist and do an interview. And it's an amazing interview to hear Michael Sheen. He can be really silly. So it's going to be interesting to hear his voice in this. And I think it's great that they got another actor to do something kind of fun. Cause when you hear a lone robot bartender, I mean, to me, that's like, I'm thinking Marvin, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was going to say either we're going with Marvin from Hitchhikers or a couple people kind of trapped in a place sort of on their own and maybe going a little stir crazy. I kind of thought if the bartender was going to look at Chris Pratt at some point and say, "You've always been here," and just go full on Shining.
You know, and I can't help but point out, same episode of Futurama, robot bartender. he was named the Isaac, and he was modeled after Isaac from the Love Boat. So the similarities nice. Just keep stacking up here.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking too with the Fifth Element, with the kind of the single-minded robot bartender that they got a little mileage out of when they were trying to get on the ship to Lost in Paradise. Mm. I can't remember the novice, the initiate, whatever. I can't remember the dude's name. The younger dude who was supposed to get on the ship. And then, was it Ian Holm? Crap. I can't remember his name. The guy that played the actual priest, Vito Cornelius, they both get individually served by that bartender who just very single-minded in dispensing drinks. But I don't think that we're going to get that. If you're going to get a voice like or a talent like Michael Sheen to do a voice, there's definitely going to be a nice chunk of dialogue there, I think. So, overall, you guys, what do you think? Does this sound like something you would plunk your hard-earned money down for to see?
I mean, you can't get two more interesting and compelling actors of this generation than Pratt and Lawrence. I mean, they're both immensely entertaining, and they've proven that time and again. And yeah, Pratt hasn't done his dramatic roles so many times, but he's always fun to watch up on screen, and in this case, you've only got two people that you're going with. You have to have people who are interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I would say for my money, you pretty much had me at Lawrence and Pratt. I mean, it's I completely agree with Corey. It's going to be interesting no matter what. Good, bad, or indifferent, it's going to be interesting. So I want to see more of like the trailers and things like that, because I really want to see what they do with some of the visual stuff. But yeah, I would definitely go and see this.
Yeah, I actually...
Yeah, go ahead, Kevin.
Oh, I was just going to say, I hadn't heard anything about this until today, but I'm definitely going to have to go look up a trailer for it after this. And
yeah, I... As soon as I heard about this and heard about the concept, and I was like, oh, Chris Pratt. Yeah, I think I would definitely check into that. So it's nice to see that this is not like a remake of something, because we've been really, I think it's very safe to say that people are kind of tired of, you know, hey, let's remake this, let's remake that. And this sounds like a, you know, fairly original concept, and they're not rehashing an old script.
Yeah.
Yeah, even if it is a riff, like Sean was saying, of Titanic or elements from something else, that's okay. That's expected. But giving us something new, something that stands out, something that surprised the person from Sony when he read the script, that's exciting.
Yeah.
And I don't think these two actors are at a point where they're just phoning it in. They're picking scripts because they find them interesting, and because, I mean, Pratt's still arguably building his brand, and Lawrence, I think, has chosen excellent concepts and projects pretty much since he started, but it's definitely, it's been building and building, and I just don't see them doing something where it's not going to be at least interesting to see.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Since we're talking about sci-fi movies, what's the most recent sci-fi movie either of you have seen? Let's start with Court.
Oh, that's terrible.
and go.
My week is broken up into TV shows for Els nerds and horror movies for Podcasts of Terror. last science fiction thing I saw... Wow. Well, we just rewatched The Force Awakens. I watched it for the second time. My wife, it was her first time seeing it. And it was one of those things that she was adamant about not going to see it in the theater because she was so turned off by the prequels.
Yeah.
But she had a really good time with it. I mean, she was still peering at her phone for 70% of the movie, but she kept looking up, and when she'd look up, she would enjoy what she saw. So that was nice. And the only other time that it's been like, I went to see a movie and I thought for sure she had to see it too, was Guardians of the Galaxy, where I went, saw the movie, and I came home and I'm like, you have to go see this with me again. And she loved it, and she's rewatched it herself past that point, and that's a lot of that is Pratt. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah,
no, he's such a, you know, there's sometimes, and it seems like recently that a lot of the comedy that I, at least I've perceived, has been coming out has been like Carell, Ferrell, and, you know, Ferrell's been doing stuff for a while, but a lot of it just seems to be like stupid funny, you know, like it's not fun funny. It needs to be putting somebody down or making somebody just look to be so horribly inept, you're not even sure how they function. Sort of thing.
The stoner humor, the Seth Rogen stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Comedy has taken a turn where, and maybe it's just that I'm old, is that what I perceive as a comedy from what I grew up with and what I thought was truly funny is not what I see comedies like today. Which is not to say that I don't think movies are still funny, but I watch the 21 Jump Street remakes, which have now a third one coming out where they cross over with Men in Black.
Yep. Yeah, MIB-23.
Yeah, they're interesting and they're humorous, and I see a lot of value to the people that are in them, but they're not so over-the-top crazy funny that I'm matching up with who their audiences are. And it's been like that since American Pie. I watched the American Pie movies and was just kind of, this is it? You know, I grew up with Porky's, and I thought Porky's was more honestly funny than American Pie was.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah.
But to some people, I would be. You know, to a younger generation, this is their movies, and this is their teen comedies, and I can't tell somebody else what they think is funny, and I don't want to. And I just have more of an issue of seeing the movies that I like kind of fade away, as opposed to hitting both audiences. But I guess that's realistic, because when I was in the 80s and early 90s watching stuff, and it was hilarious to me, it may not have been hilarious to the generations before.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And I think you're right with when you were mentioning the prequels. You see that there, because you've got, you know, our generation's Star Wars was 4, 5, and 6, and then like Kevin, his generation's Star Wars, maybe actually a little before Kevin, was the prequels, and now Kevin is a teenager. His kind of Star Wars is this new Force Awakens that's coming out. So, you know, you kind of do fit into your own little box and say, you know, identify with the things that are of your time a lot better, I think.
Well, the first one I saw was Revenge of the Sith, and I thought that was the bee's knees when I saw it. But even I think too, it depends on what you're looking at in a movie. Like, the prequels had a lot more special effects, and they were much bigger than the original movies. Mm. But the original movies did a much better job with character development and telling a story than the newer movies
did. Right. And that's, I think, what comedy's kind of changed on, too.
Yeah.
Is that it's not telling you a story. It's a series of scenes where something funny happens, but not cohesive in a plot line.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of it is shock value, you know. You know, your bad grandpas. I introduced Kevin the other night to watching Borat for the first time. Yeah. And Borat is a hysterical movie the first time you see it. On rewatch, the movie is just flat because you know everything that's coming and there's no humor left to it, you know.
Yeah.
Watching it with him 8 years, I guess, or 9 years after I saw it originally, it was kind of funny again because I forgot a lot of stuff. But I guarantee you, if I went back and watched it today, having just seen it a week and a half ago, I wouldn't be laughing at it again.
Oh, you might laugh at the one scene where they're wrestling in the hotel room. The naked, you would laugh at
naked
that.
Naked wrestling, that's funny anytime. That's,
that never gets old.
Okay, here we are. So. and kind of equate to that, I was a huge fan, and I'm going to go back a little ways here. Early 90s, Evan Dorkin did a series of comics called Milk and Cheese, Dairy Products Gone Bad. And it was a black and white indie, and I read it, and I went, oh my God, this is the funniest thing I've ever read in my life. Oh my God, here's my money. Take it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I read it, and then you had another one come out. And then after, like, and it wasn't like a monthly, it was like, I don't know, quarterly, or, you know, they put a few out here and there. And after I got a few, I'm like, oh, I need to reread these. And yeah, you're absolutely right. There is some comedy that once you, I mean, Milk and Cheese, the whole concept is they're like almost, I'm trying to think size-wise, they're probably about 3.5 feet tall. One is a carton of hate, the other is a wedge of spite, and they are Milk and Cheese. And they have arms, they have legs, and they are the most vicious dairy products you will ever meet. And they, you know, the end of a comic invariably will be them just beating the ever-loving crap out of somebody with just with their fists or with bats or, you know, whatever. And describing it to you does not do it any justice. I can assure you that the first time you read it, you'll probably laugh a lot. But, you know, like you mentioned with Borat, the second time you read it, you're like, you know, because it's that initial impact. It was shocking. I had never seen a comic book like that before in my life, especially being, you know, growing up on DC, you know, a black and white indie comic with, you know, dairy products beating the crap out of somebody. Well, you know, there you got something. But the second time around, it just wasn't didn't have that same impact and enjoyment level.
Well, also sometimes jokes are of their time, and Milk and Cheese may have been funny because of the references and the styles of things when it was coming out in the early 90s. Bugs Bunny cartoons. You ever watch the Bugs Bunny cartoons?
Oh, yeah.
Where they have characters that are based on actors from certain era films that unrecognizable today.
Yeah.
But at that point in time, and even when I was a kid and I recognized the actors from watching older films, I was like, oh, this is hilarious. Look at these spot-on caricatures of people like Bogart or...
Edward G. Robinson.
Lauren Bacall. Yeah.
And that was great. But I still think that there's a timelessness to 90% of the Warner Brothers Bugs Bunny cartoons from that point, where it was just... It was universal ideas, it was universal comedy, and it doesn't seem to go stale. Whereas I bought, or my mother actually bought me, at my request, a movie that I used to like from the 80s called My Science Project.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I just had so many great memories of it as a kid. It's got Dennis Hopper as a science teacher who's a hippie who's kind of gone a little bit establishment by working at school. And this guy finds a device that he uses to... tries to use it to soup up his car, but it is turning in for his science project for school, and it opens up a time warp, and all of these creatures and people from different times come through it, and he has to go and rescue the nerdy girl that he's kind of started dating in it. And it's just so very 80s. And again, it's not a super coherent story, but a lot of it is the way that they interact with each other as the characters. There's a lot of gay slurs in it from one of the characters, which seemed at that point in time perfectly acceptable. And it's not now. It's like listening to Andrew Dice Clay's old stuff today.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like I cringe to think that this used to be funny because we didn't know that it wasn't.
Right.
But the same thing goes with like Blazing Saddles, classic movie, but the level of offensiveness that it now has, now that we've become a little bit more enlightened as a society.
But Blazing Saddles is subverting it. It's like All in the Family. It's saying, here's all these racist things that you people are saying and making jokes about, and we're trying to show you that you're really messed up for thinking this stuff is okay.
But I can see it from that point of view, but I think you'd really have a hard time getting something like that. I don't think that would ever make a remake list.
Oh, no, and it's because we've become also way too sensitive to it in ways not in a good sense, because by subverting things with humor, we start to open people's ways of thinking who maybe wouldn't change their minds otherwise. And it builds an awareness, but instead we just like, oh, you can't say that word, or you can't talk about that subject, and we try to lock things down, and all that does is cause people to feel angry and like, why are you accusing me of being this way, or why are you trying to take this away from me? And it cheers people up as opposed to opening people and having them interact and kind of find a common ground. And comedy is great for that.
Yeah. And, you know,
Mel Brooks is one of the masters of it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not to kind of sideline this at all, but the other interesting thing I find with a lot of movies and things like that, because we were talking about being of their time and, you know, how some movies just are flat on the second remake or whatever. But I also find, like, you get a movie that has such a novel concept to it that every single thing that follows it that is like it is simply a ripoff. And, like, the one that comes to mind for me, and it's not a good movie, I don't think, is The Blair Witch Project. When The Blair Witch Project came out,
really?
They caught lightning in a bottle. They were the first to do that on a major scale, so that regardless of whether it's a better movie or not, if you make a movie in that style, you are ripping them off as far as people are going to see it. It's just going to be another, you know, Blair Witch Project. And they proved it themselves when they tried to make a sequel to it.
But what they did with the sequel was great because they didn't try to do the same thing.
Right.
It wasn't found footage.
Yep.
It was aware that doing that again was not going to get them the same result. And I'm not saying it was as good a movie.
Right.
Although I have some love for it because of some of the themes and ideas, some of the actors and actresses in it I like from other stuff too. But at least they didn't go in and said, we did that, now let's go do it again and just amped it up.
Right.
That happens a lot.
Yeah.
But you're right. Everything that came out after that was found footage this and found footage that. We just watched and did a review of a movie called Entrance, which was not found footage, but had such similarities to The Blair Witch in the way that how it goes from being about one woman's life to then being about a very horrific scene at the end where everything goes really wrong, that it kind of evokes some of the same things, but it at least stood on its own. But yeah, for a while it was just like the Chronicle was found footage with super dicks. What was the one by Abrams? Cloverfield.
Yeah,
Cloverfield
was found footage, and it's just you have a disbelief after a while. It's like the first time it was a buy-in, the next time it was okay, let's see what they can do, and then after that it's just no, this is overused now.
Yeah. When I saw Blair Witch the first time, I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it on VHS. You
know, same here.
That's almost funny to say that now. I saw it on VHS. And I can tell you that, you know, my girlfriend at the time only got motion sick out of it. I watched it all the way through and I couldn't sleep. You know, it just had that kind of an impact on me. I could not go to sleep that night. Yeah. And I had a great time at work the next day. But
didn't help when you woke up and your girlfriend was standing in the corner.
Yeah.
Interesting side note. Something, if I'm really tired, I will fall asleep and then eventually my eyes will open. So I will sleep with my eyes open. And I had a girlfriend who thought I was dead.
Yeah.
She woke up and she's like, why are you looking at
I've known people who sit up in their sleep and are awake and will talk but have no concept of what you're saying back to them. And people who do that are creepy as hell. And it is one of the creepiest things you could have happen to you.
Yep. I fell asleep on a couch once and I was very tired. I found out later on that I freaked out somebody because they sat down next to me and were talking to me. And they thought that I was fully awake and just being quiet and being reflective because I was sitting up on the couch asleep with my eyes open. Mm. And my girlfriend at the time was like, you know, he's asleep, right? And this person's like, no. And he like waved his hand in front of my face and I did not flinch or move. And he's like, oh, God, that's creepy. And she's like, you have no idea.
What's worse is when you start talking about all the plans you have to kill everybody.
Yeah, because once you convince everybody that you do this, then you can start having fun with it.
You know, that was one of those cards I never really wanted to play, though, because then it was like, well, it's one of those things where if I'm like, if there's something going on and I've like, you know, incapacitated or something, I don't want people to think I'm screwing around. You know, it's one of those things where that potentially wields a lot of power. And if you misuse that, something bad could happen when you need help the most. So, that's... that's just something
the boy
who
snored wolf.
Yeah,
exactly.
If you're going to play that card, play it at the end of the relationship, because if the relationship wasn't over before you do it, it will be after you do it. So.
It will be then, that's for sure.
True what they say, with great power comes great responsibility.
Exactly.
I'm a firm believer in that. I'm
or
also
when
a firm believer in
another starts trying to program you to like kill their boss.
I think I just came up with a great
idea
for a movie.
So cut his brakes.
We need to reprogram Brad so that every time we say a certain word, he clucks like a chicken, and then we can just have fun on the podcast.
Oh, no, please don't do that. That would be terrible.
I already know.
I make enough goofy sounds on my own. I don't think I need to be hypnotized for that. My family, we speak in sound effects.
Mm.
What I mean by that is if we forget the word and inevitably we have a conversation, we'll forget the word and like my mom will like go or something like that. And it's like, oh, yeah, OK, I know immediately what you're talking about. And I had to warn Anessa that, you know, this happens. And if you see it happen, you know, we haven't had a stroke. There's nothing playing with you. This is just how my mom and I communicate and always have. We forget the word that, you know, she'll go off, and she'll point. And I'm like, I know exactly what she means. So it's just this audible shorthand that we have. So, yes, I make enough goofy sound effects on my own. I don't need to cluck randomly as a chicken while I'm doing a show. So
unless it's a mating call.
Well, you don't need to hear that.
I'm hurt.
Moving right along.
Yes, moving right along. This isn't that type of show.
The next hour might be.
Yeah, I think that might happen. But we're coming towards the end here. I wanted to give Corey an opportunity to pitch the podcast, The Terror.
We talk about stuff that'll make you pee your pants, if at all possible. Matt and I do a show every week, released Tuesday mornings, and we talk about terror. We try to give you at least a movie of the week that we review. A lot of them are coming from listener suggestions, or at the very least from our guests. We've had some terrific guests on there, including Sean has been on. We've had people from the Worst Episode Ever podcast, Ink Geek Studios. Carrie has been on there. It's been a great time. And I think we're just finally fine-tuning the show. We've kind of got it into our groove now, which doesn't mean that we can't grow, but we're still doing what we can. And we want to not just concentrate on movies. We want to try to bring more stuff into it. But of course, we're old and tired.
Fair enough.
These things don't write themselves.
Matt does keep promising at some point he's going to try to do some haunted house explorations and bring that to the show. And I'm looking forward to that because his heart's better than mine.
And, you know, the central Wisconsin, Matt also lives in Wisconsin. He lives about, I want to say, an hour and a half away from where I'm at. And between the two areas, we take Halloween fairly seriously. And there's lots of corn mazes and stuff because there's lots of rural places. Imagine Wisconsin with rural places. I'm sure you're shocked. So there's a lot of opportunity for corn mazes and haunted houses and things like that. So he has a fine pool to pull from, as it were. So,
you can dairy just towns, get him to do it. Frightening on their own. Silence of the Cows. It's and of course, Brad was also just talking about demonic cheese.
Yes,
that can happen. That can happen.
You know what they say about demonic cheese? It's not Gouda.
Oh, that's a dad joke.
Whose kid is that? Jeez.
Yeah, really. Because I don't get that from my dad's side of the family or anything, you know.
Just a quick pitch, one of the shows that I do, the one show that I captain and I'm not necessarily a co-host on is The Adventure Party. And Adventure Party, like I said earlier, Glenn Bittner and I talk about games, gaming, board games, card games. Glenn works for a game shop in Milwaukee called the Board Game Barrister, so he is constantly putting on demonstrations. I think weekly they do a Games with Glenn So it's a whole bunch of games. And then there is GlenCon that he does once a year, where they measure the amount of games that they have, not by the number, but by the footage it takes up. It is a wall that is about 7 feet tall by 11 feet long that they have available. And during GlenCon, which is done in the fall, there are plenty of games to be played. So he is definitely in the know, and he gives us a weekly review of a game of his choosing, and we talk about that. So you can check out all of our shows at Galactic Netcasts at gncasts.com and see what you like. Check us out, and if you like it, come back. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, and if I can just tack on the end of there, Brad, Dave Nelson wasn't able to join us for this roundtable because he is celebrating his wedding anniversary with his wife. And, you know, sometimes that life gets, you know, in the way of these podcast things. But, you know, if it wasn't for Dave, we wouldn't have Galactic Netcast. We wouldn't be able to do some of the things that we're doing. So, you know, big thanks to Dave for his support in the shows that we're doing and in helping Galactic Netcast be what it is. And folks don't realize, we see it, but I don't think folks outside see just how hard Dave works to get things done for us and for the network. And, you know, big props to him, and he definitely deserves it. And we're glad he's off having a nice time celebrating his anniversary. So
a well-deserved break.
Yes, absolutely. But next year, plan it better, Dave. All right.
Dave, move your wedding anniversary next year. We got to have this podcast marathon.
What the hell were you thinking, getting married on this date 2 years ago when I was going to... Never mind.
For shame, Dave Nelson. For shame.
I was kind of wondering when we were going to rip on Dave.
Yeah, well, I knew I was going to get it in eventually. So, all right, well, I want to let folks know, stick around in the next hour. Corey is going to hang around, and we are going to do an episode of the aforementioned Podcast of Terror. Stick around. We're going to talk about the movie The Pact, and I don't know about the other two, but I've got a lot to say about this shitstorm of a movie. But thank you to Brad. Thank you for the past 2 hours, for sharing your stories, for heading up the roundtable. I really appreciate all the work you did getting ready for this. And also thank you to Corey for being here for the roundtable, and to Kevin. Kevin's also going to be hanging out with us in the next hour as well. So
yeah, I got nothing to do until midnight tonight, apparently.
Yeah.
I'm hanging out. So
yes, we are
the
now.
Dad jokes are just going to get worse.
Oh yeah. Well, and it's going to get worse because I'm going to get more tired, and I'm going to start making them. So you're going to get them in stereo.
At least you have a good reason for making dad jokes, because you actually have kids. Yeah. I mean,
well, you're just in training is all. So, yeah. All right, well, folks, stick around. We're going to take a couple minutes break real quick to get drinks and take care of some stuff. If you're listening on Alpha Geek Radio, we are in the Trivia Geeks chat room. Hop on over to that. Chat with us. Let us know. If you're listening, let us know on Facebook, on Twitter. Send me a tweet at Wolf King Podcasts or at Trivia Geek Show. Let me know who's out there listening, and we'll maybe give you a call out in the next hour or so just to say hi and thank you for listening to the marathon. Don't forget, you can go over to bit.ly/WolfKingAutism to donate, and we'll be right back in a few minutes with Podcast of Terror.
You have been listening to a production of Galactic Netcasts. For more about this show and others, go to gncasts.com. That's GNCASTS.com.